Imagine a school day built around your child's needs and interests. It's possible with K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited, tuition-free, online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn from state-certified teachers trained to teach online. And with the flexibility to learn wherever there's internet, it can fit into any family schedule. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. You can make the switch at any time. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more.
Live on Air, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with emeraldconnection.net.
Hello, good evening and welcome. It's lovely to have your company again for another edition of the Irish programme, Live on Era. Coming up in the next hour, I think I've put together a nice little programme for you today. I will be playing for you the number one song, and it was an Irish song as well, on this day back in 1965, a little number one memory for you. George Lee will be joining me to talk to me about some of the stories that were making headlines at home. And some of them were big headlines, some of them were less big headlines, but it got people chatting, and we'll be talking to George a little bit about that. Some famous Irish birthdays that are happening this week, we will be marking and commemorating those. Peter O'Dwyer will be talking to us about the ongoing saga. It's going on as long as Coronation Street at this stage. Brexit, he'll be talking to us, and the relationship with Ireland as it stands at the moment. There'll be a little bit of a history lesson in there as well, and some jolly good music. Some of the music will of course be shaped by some of the events happening on the programme, as we like to do on a regular basis. By the way, if you would like to get in touch with us at any stage on the programme, the email address and the best way to get in contact is ger@tre.radio, simple as that. We'll be looking at birthdays. In fact, we're going to be looking at birthdays right now. Today, the 18th of February, marks the 71st birthday of actress Sinead Cusack. She was born in Dublin in 1948, so we say happy birthday to her. On Wednesday, we mark the anniversary of the birth of Pádraic O'Connor, who was born in Galway. Pádraic O'Connor, writer and poet, born on the 20th of February, 1882. On Thursday, it's the 21st of February. Sean Houston, revolutionary, who was shot after the 1916 rebellion. He was born in Dublin in 1891. Michael O'Kennedy, the former Fianna Fáil minister, was born in Nina in County Tipperary 83 years ago, so we say happy 83rd birthday to him. Friday of this week is the 22nd of February. Sean O'Fallon, the writer, was born in Cork in 1900. And amateur golfer Joe Carr, a man that did so much to promote and advance the game of golf in Ireland, was born in Inchicore in Dublin in 1922. Saturday is the 23rd of February. A man that passed away about 18 months ago thereabouts, Tom Murphy, the playwright, was born in County Galway in 1935. And finally, next weekend, next Sunday, the 24th of February, Dermot Early, later to become Lieutenant General Dermot Early, the famous Gaelic footballer, was born in Ballinlough in County Roscommon in 1949. That's a man that passed away about 5 or 6 years ago. His son, Dermot Jr., of course, a fine footballer and indeed in the army as well. John Philip Holland, the man who is credited with inventing the submarine, was born in Liscannor in West Clare on the 24th of February, 1841. Just some of the people in Ireland and of Irish descent celebrating birthdays in the coming week. Now, there's no musical birthdays in there, but here is a man that we're going to be talking about, or mentioning at least, not talking about, but mentioning in our history lesson when we do it a little later on. Here's a man that sang for many years with the Dubliners. It's Ronnie Drew and a song called Finnegan's Wake on Live on Era, the Irish programme, brought to you in association with EmeraldConnection.net.
Tim Finnegan lived in Walking Street, a gentleman Irish mighty odd. He had a brogue both rich and sweet, and to rise in the world he carried a hod. But Tim had a bit of a tippler's way, with a love of the liquor he was born, and to send him on his way each day, he'd love with a crater every morn. Whack full of that, will you dance to your partners around the floor with your trotter shake? Isn't it the truth they tell you, lots of fun at Finnegan's Wake? One morning Tim was rather full, his old head felt heavy which made him shake. He fell off the ladder and he broke his skull, and they carried him home, his corpse to wake. Oh, they wrapped him up in a nice clean sheet, and they laid him out upon the bed, with a bottle of whiskey at his feet and a bottle of porter at his head. Whack full of that, will you dance to your partners around the floor with your fellow shake? Isn't it the truth they tell you, lots of fun at Finnegan's Wake? Well, his friends assembled at the wake, and Mrs. Finnegan called for lunch. Well, first she brought them tea and cake, then piped a bag of brandy punch. Then the Winnie Malone began to cry. Ah, such a lovely corpse did you never see. Was it him aboard and why did you die? Will you hold your gob, says Muddy McGee. Whack, full of that, will you dance to your partners around the floor with your trotter shake? Isn't it the truth? I tell you, lots of fun at Finnegan's Wake. Oh, well, Mary Murphy took up the job. Ah, Billy, she are wrong, I'm sure. Oh, well, Billy fetched the belt and the gob and left us sprawling on the floor. Oh, civil war did then engage. Well, woman to woman and man to man. Shillelady law was all the rage, and a row and eruption of two began. Whack, full of dough, when you dance to your partners around the floor with your trotter shake. Isn't it the truth? I tell you, lots of fun at Finnegan's Wake. Well, Mick Maloney ducked his head when a bottle of whiskey flew at him. He ducked and landing on the bed, the whiskey scatters over Tim. Hobby daddy revives and see how he rises. Tim Finnegan rising in the bed, saying, twiddle your whiskey around like blazes. Be the tundered and jazes, did you think I was dead? Whack, full of dough, will you dance to your partner around the floor with your trotter shake? Isn't it the truth? I tell you, lots of fun at Finnegan's Wake. With your
ah, there we go, the fabulous voice of Ronnie Drew and a great song called Finnegan's Wake. Take a very quick break right now, come back to me just after that, and I'll be talking to George Lee about some of the stories that were making headlines, some big headlines, some small headlines, in Ireland over the past 7 days.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with EmeraldConnection.net. Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with EmeraldConnection.net.
Well, here we are, another week done and dusted. It included Valentine's and much, much more. But to have a look at some of the stories that made headlines in Ireland and got people chatting, here's George Lee to talk to us about what's been happening in the past 7 days or thereabouts. George, good to talk to you again.
And you too, Ger, surrounded by roses here. It's wonderful.
From Valentine's, is it?
Absolutely.
You sent them to yourself, obviously.
The cards, sure.
In the good old days, when you'd be going out with the girl, I used to always send the Valentine's, of course, and still do to my lovely lady. But, you know, when you'd be going out and the girlfriend would say to you, well, how many Valentine's did you get? And I'd always say two, even though to be only the one, just get some thinking. So, you know, there you go.
I'm saying nothing.
I noticed that. Anyway, let's leave Valentine's alone and let's have a look and see what was happening in other places. Look, we have to start with health and a lot happening. The nurses' dispute didn't go ahead. It was resolved insofar as suspended. So what happened there?
We did predict it last week. The Labour Relations Commission kicked in and those talks went right to the wire and they did come to a resolution. However, listening to the commentary on it during the week, there is still a level of disquiet, I think, within the nurses, and it still does have to go to a vote. So I would say that that vote will be very tight.
Well, that's good news. Now, the National Children's Hospital and the construction company that won the tender to do that, BAM, B-A-M, they came under fire, they believe, from Taoiseach Leo Varadkar during the week in the House. They gave him a certain period of time to correct that. And now they're saying, look, if you want to kind of drop this whole idea, yeah, that's fine with us. We'll go along with that. So it's kind of getting a bit awkward, isn't it?
Well, it is. And I suppose the Taoiseach and the Fine Gael spin, I suppose, has been very clear about it. He didn't mention anybody. He put out a very general statement saying that there were people that he wouldn't want to ever tender again for a government contract. But he didn't mention anybody by name. And I think that's very important to point out.
Yeah.
The other side of this then is that BAM said, well, okay, look, if you're not happy with what we're doing, you know, just re-tender it. Knowing full well, I suppose, in some respects, that would put the project back so far, and that with building inflation and everything at this stage, you know, it would also be a serious cost implication. Of course, it was announced by Simon Harris that they will not be going back to re-tender the project and that they will be moving forward with it. But interestingly, Ger, and I think this is the very human side of it as well, and Simon Harris appeared on RTE Radio. He was talking in terms of his own personal life and how there was a protest was held right outside his own front door. And this worries me a little bit. Stuff is beginning to happen on social media. People are beginning to bring protests to people's front doors. We need to separate the person from what's happening. And otherwise, I think that we are really, really going down a very dangerous road.
He did, and he mentioned that politicians are becoming dehumanized through the media, through social media, through commentary and so on. But I really couldn't help but think about the dehumanization of people, particularly women who have gone through the cervical screening scandal, and how they have been treated as numbers and treated as letters. I think there's a lesson to be learned on both sides.
There probably is, Ger, but I think there is a race to the bottom here, and it has been brought on, and I did mention this a couple of weeks ago and what we were talking about. You know, the internet will eat itself eventually, and I think the amount of hurt and the amount of misinformation and the amount of, dare I say, fake news that appeared on both sides of every argument, I think is becoming a very, very serious issue.
You started that by saying that, as we had predicted last week, I hope your powers of prediction will stand firm when we talk about Cheltenham in a couple of weeks' time. There you go, fingers crossed on that one.
All right. Well, there are four legs and a tail, whatever we win, sir.
And somebody will win. Now, President Michael D. Higgins embarked on an official visit to England, where he visited Birmingham and Liverpool during the week.
Yes, and it kind of went a little bit under the radar with everything else that was happening in the media. But I think it's a lovely story. A lot of my own family would have gone, I suppose, to the UK, particularly in the 40s and 50s. I think it's very important to understand the Irish community in the UK. And I suppose, as well as that, with Brexit and everything coming up, that, you know, that they would be recognised for being what they are, which is Irish people. So his wife, Sabina, visited organisations and institutions of importance in the two major cities. It was a third official visit to Liverpool by President Higgins, but his first, amazingly, to Birmingham.
I was amazed when I saw that.
Well, Birmingham would have been the place where an awful lot of Irish people would have gone to in the first instance. I mean, Birmingham and parts of London up around the Kilburn Road, and that really would have been the hotbeds of the Irish in the UK in those days.
All right. Ireland provided €2.5 million to educate Palestinians last year, and earlier this week, Minister for Foreign Affairs Simon Coveney, who's got a huge amount on his plate at the minute, he announced the launch of an Ireland-Palestine scholarship programme.
And I suppose any mention of Palestine and Israel will be controversial. And I suppose this is done against the backdrop of America cutting aid to the Palestinians completely over the last number of months, and the problems that that has brought into a lot of the settlements. But I mean, looking at this, Ger, I think he has probably got it right. Education is the key to an awful lot of things, and it's also the key to people understanding each other. This announcement will see the creation of a dedicated scholarship initiative where Palestinian students will be able to avail a variety of master's level courses in higher education institutions across Ireland. There will be 20 full scholarships for the 19-20 academic year. And Simon Coveney said that the increased access to education instills greater confidence and empowers people to better articulate their own needs. And empowers, I think, is the important word here. If we take this out of the political context completely, I think the empowerment of people and the development of leadership is what's very important.
Indeed. Tourism, we are very reliant on tourism in Ireland, and business tourism, I saw during the week, was worth €28 million in January of this year alone.
Yeah, it's a considerable amount of money. It was a record month for the Tourism Authority. You know, bear in mind that we're talking about January here, which is probably the part of the year where the leisure tourism is at its lowest point. It attracted 57 business conferences and events to Ireland in the month of January, which is considerable. And I know we have quite a few people that actually listen to this, obviously across Europe, but also in the United States. And I know that they never cease to be amazed at the scale of what we talk about is so much smaller than the scale of things in America. But 57 business conferences in a country the size of Ireland is in January. In business tourism, I think at this stage, we need to be looking at it post-Brexit, that this could become a very important part of the Irish economy.
All right. We love going to, as we say in Ireland, the pictures. There's nothing nicer than going off to the pictures. The movies.
They do, sir. Or the flicks, as we used to call them when we were small.
The flicks,
Irish people, they visit the cinema more than any other nationality in Europe, according to new figures from the International Union of Cinema. On average, guess how many visits per capita were made in 2018?
12.
3.3 cinema visits per person.
I knew that because you'd written it down for me. Just wanted to be funny. Anyway,
to put that in context, that's twice the EU average of 1.6.
Wow.
So that says that we go twice as much. Overall, the figures show that there is a slight decrease in cinema attendances. And this is the interesting part of it. I just love Ireland. This is attributed to the fact that the World Cup was on last year and the summer heat wave really kicked in as well. But I can just hear the mothers of all the kids, and you're not going, it's too fine to be sitting inside the dark room all day.
Can you remember the last time you went to the pictures?
I can, Ger, yeah. I actually went to see Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh, did you? Okay.
I'd be a big Queen fan. So, yeah, I did. Now, it's a lot different than the pictures that we used to go to back in the day, when you'd have to queue up and you could wind up being told after queuing in the rain for 2 hours that it was household before you even got to the door. This namby-pamby thing of being able to book with a credit card and able to have your popcorn delivered to your seat.
Yeah, all right. Anyway, yeah, the pictures. I haven't been for a long, long time. Must go again shortly. Dublin. It's been a mixed week for Dublin. Tell me why.
A report by INRIX, and again, I heard this mentioned on the TV during the weekend. You know, it comes out with a report by INRIX, and we're not supposed to know who INRIX are.
Exactly,
But they're a global company that specializes in transportation analytics. Apparently, it's ranked Dublin's traffic congestion amongst the worst in Europe.
Wow.
It found that Dublin drivers spent about 246 hours in traffic in 2018. That just defies belief.
Wow.
I mean, that's a car park, you know. It's also the distinction of having the lowest city centre speeds in all of Europe, with speeds dipping as low as 6 miles per hour. At peak times, speeds could reach about 18 kilometres per hour. And at off-peak times, speeds are around 37 kilometres per hour during free-flow times.
There's nothing worse for me than having to sit in traffic in Dublin. It is just a nightmare, and I cannot understand how people can live by fighting traffic for 2 hours before doing a day's work and then fighting the traffic back home again for another 2 hours. It just beggars belief, but there you go. I suppose needs must for many people.
And we've had these conversations, Ger, over the weeks as well. And you know, they're consistently putting more and more and more jobs into the city centre of Dublin. You really have to question it, because the infrastructure just isn't there.
But it wasn't all bad news for Dublin.
Yeah, it wasn't. On the other side of it, is he contradicting himself? Dublin has re-entered the top 10 most livable cities for Europeans, according to a global survey. The city ranks joint ninth in the survey, up from 11th place last year, and that's due to improved scores in infrastructure and personal safety.
It was a sad day in Kerry, and this is something that people who are not Irish may not fully understand. Tell me about what happened in Kerry on Wednesday.
Yeah, and this is the complete other end of the spectrum from the last story. The only shop serving a small Gaeltacht community at the foot of Mount Grandon closed its doors for the last time. Bohabui Tidanfuisht has been at the centre of the community since it was opened 110 years ago. And Johanna Nichrahur has been running the shop for the last 50 years, and she's now decided to retire. And this is probably part of the unpost retirement plans that have been rolled out across the country over the last number of years. Tidanfuisht was the last shop serving the parishes known as Paróiste Mórdhach and Paróiste na Chéile. The area has been hit hard in recent years, with many businesses closing down. A shop and a post office also closed in Ballinacowl last year, and two restaurants in the parish have also closed. The closure of this shop in Bohabui, and hear this, means the people of the parish will have to travel over 14 kilometres to Dingle or Ballyferriter to do their shopping. This is the decline of rural Ireland, the decline, I suppose, in many ways of communities. It leads to social isolation in a way that we may not have seen before. And I think it also speaks to some of what the likes of the Healy Rays have been saying over the last while. And while you may or may not agree with their opinions on things, what they're actually saying here is that rural Ireland is dying and we need to support it rather than put barriers in its way.
I was watching a programme on RTE television during the week where one of the Healy Rays was debating with Eamon Ryan, the leader of the Green Party. And I tweeted that it was very obvious, looking at that particular interaction between the two, that it really is a battle between urban and rural in Ireland at the moment, and the rural areas are not going to fare well.
They're not, and again, I spoke about this last week, I think, Ger, where I said, you know, that there's two economies in Ireland. There's one on the East Coast and there's one on the West Coast. And the sooner that we start developing the one on the West Coast, because if Ireland were a seesaw, the West Coast would be up in the air. It's as simple as that.
A number of initiatives taken recently have shown that an average of 8 vehicles a day have been seized by Gardaí from unaccompanied learner drivers in the past 2 months. Tell us about that and the background to it.
Yes, and again, I suppose this is part of the whole clampdown as well on unaccompanied drivers, and there's been some very high-profile stories told over the last while. So between 22nd of December and the 10th of February, a total of 337 vehicles were seized from learner drivers because they were not accompanied by a person holding a full driving licence. Now, in you and my day, you know, you kind of got your provisional and your merriment that do your test for 10 years, yeah. But you drove away at your heart's content. That is no longer acceptable in respect of that. Once it's applied across the board, I think people don't have a problem with it. Since December 22nd, last, car owners who allow learner drivers to use their cars unaccompanied face fines or even jail terms.
We love chatting about the weather in Ireland. In fact, we like talking about it no matter where we are. And according to the Met Office, we're looking at temperatures rising, and indeed there was a record happened during the week in relation to temperatures in Ireland.
Yes, there was a temperature as high as 16.5 degrees. Whoa. In Dublin during the week, which is very, very high, as you know, for February. The temperature was recorded at the Phoenix Park at lunchtime on Friday, and it beat the maximum temperature recorded in February in recent years. The Dublin temperature also got hotter than the likes of Paris at 14, Madrid at 15, and Lisbon at 16 degrees. Whatever about the Phoenix Park, I head to West Clare this week with some guests, so I'm sure it'll be beautiful no matter where I am.
I'm sure it will. And finally today, mass goers in some Dublin parishes will soon be able to make contactless payments when they're making their offering to the church. What's that about?
Yeah, and you know, this is actually something that I've spoken to my own parish priest about over the years. More and more people are gone to cards and using cards for pretty much everything that they do anymore. And I've often found myself in church, and you put your hand in your pocket and you might have 2 euros or whatever, and you put into the basket, or you might have nothing at all in your pocket because you'd be using the card to get whatever you wanted to get on the way home. And it makes more sense that in this world that, you know, that there should be a way that if I want to make a donation to my church on a Sunday, that I can do it with a card payment. And that's essentially what they're doing. So they're making contactless payments as an offering to the churches. But as the number of people have been attending Mass has declined, parish finances have suffered.
And do you think it'll catch on? For older people now, for older people particularly, I mean, 50-somethings, we're used to it, but, you know, the 60s, 70s, 80s, you know, will they engage?
Well, they'll continue to put their money in the basket. It just means that I don't look so guilty when I don't put the money in the basket anymore. I can kind of say, I got to send the card.
But it now means you can put 10p on instead of 2 euro, because no one will see.
Well, look, there's that, but I think for all of the decline in religion that we've had across the country, I think an awful lot of people still would see the church as being the church building and perhaps their local priest as being an essential part of the parish community, for want of a better word. And I think people do also realise that it has to continue. You know, the buildings have to be kept up, and you know, the man has to have some class of a living as well.
All right. Well, George, as always, a joy to talk to you. Thank you very much for filling us in on some of the stories that had people talking in Ireland over the past 7 days. And we look forward to seeing what you unearth for us next week.
It will be a treasure.
Indeed. Enjoy West Clare. Good luck.
You can moan, but no one's going to drive you home. This time you're on your own. For a change, in the dark, watch out for the broken hearts. It goes with lost inside the dance. You're in a different world. The music swirls, your body twirls, and you forget about it all until the curtain falls, until the lights come on.
Saying, as the saying goes. Right, going to take a very quick break. Come back to me just after that. We've got a history lesson. And don't forget, I'll also be playing the number one song on this day from 1965 very shortly.
Live on Air, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with emeraldconnection.net. Live on Air, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with emeraldconnection.net.
Welcome back to the programme. Now, can I tell you about some of the events that were happening in history down through the years in this coming week? Today is the 18th of February, and on this day, back in 1948, a coalition government took over under Fine Gael's John A. Costello. And I didn't know until I was doing a little bit of research on this that the A stands for Aloysius. 1964, on this day, the death in Black Rock of novelist Morris Walsh, author of the original story of The Quiet Man. And if you recall, before Christmas, I interviewed Morris's grandson, Manus Walsh. I spoke with him in his home in Ballyvaughan in County Clare. Wonderful artist that he is, and a composer of music and songs and stuff as well. 1982, on this day, a general election in the Republic led to a Fianna Fáil minority government. Charles Haughey succeeded Garrett Fitzgerald as Taoiseach on that day. In the year 2000, singer Bono from U2 was nominated for the 2003 Nobel Peace Prize. It was the second year in succession that he had been nominated. Also on that very date, 12 men serving sentences in Mountjoy Prison in Dublin made Irish legal history when they became the first graduates of a new course on the very subject that put them behind bars, the law. Congratulations to them. Tomorrow is the 19th of February, 1939. On that date, Eamon de Valera states his intention to preserve Irish neutrality in the event of a Second World War. 1987, a general election in the Republic returned Fianna Fáil as government with Charles Haughey as Taoiseach once again. 1999, on the 19th of February, families of missing IRA murder victims, known as the disappeared, pleaded with Sinn Féin leaders to use their influence with the IRA to find out where the dead are buried. And thankfully, we know that the majority of those bodies have been recovered at this stage. 2001, according to the latest price survey, taxes make prices of cars highest in the EU in Ireland. And we are in no doubt about that even today. Wednesday is the 20th of February, 1892. On that day, the first performance of Oscar Wilde's Lady Windermere's Fan. 1979, a group of 11 loyalists known as the Shankill Butchers were sentenced to life imprisonment for 112 offences, including 19 murders. In 1985, in a highly controversial vote, the Irish government defied the powerful Catholic Church and approved the sale of contraceptives. In 2002, after intense speculation that the Abbey Theatre would move to the south side of the Liffey to a completely new location in Dublin Docklands, Arts Minister Sheila de Valera informed the board of the theatre that the government had decided that it would be redeveloped on its current location. In 2003, the European Commission was accused of abusing private citizens' rights by conceding to American pressure on a data protection issue. Transatlantic airlines, such as Aer Lingus, were to be forced to provide US authorities with the names, addresses, telephone numbers, itineraries and credit card details of all passengers flying to the United States. Thursday is the 21st of February, 1922. The Garda Síochána Conan na Héireann, Guardians of the Peace of Ireland, was founded. 2001, the country's multi-billion pound livestock industry is on full alert for signs of foot and mouth disease after the first outbreak in Britain for 20 years was confirmed in pigs. On the same day, Ronnie Drew, there we go, we played Ronnie a little earlier on, I told you he'd get a mention of the history lesson. Ronnie Drew became one of the first non-sportsmen to receive a Posthouse Legend in Life Award. 2003, a rare political letter written by Michael Collins fetched a record price of €28,000 at auction. Despite fierce bidding by the National Library, the letter was purchased by singer Enya's manager, Mikey Ryan, who says that he wanted the letter to remain in Ireland. Friday the 22nd of February, 1832, the first burial took place at Glasnevin Cemetery. 2001, authorities began placing a massive security cordon on sea and airports and along the 300-mile border with Northern Ireland in a determined bid to prevent animals infected with foot and mouth disease from entering the country. Saturday is the 23rd of February, and on that day back in 1943, 35 people died in a fire at St. Joseph's Orphanage in Cavan. In 1944, children's allowances were introduced in the Free State. In the year 2000, according to a report released by the National Roads Authority. At that time, nearly half of Irish motorists never wore a seatbelt. Men were the worst offenders, with two-thirds admitting that they did not strap themselves in. We have changed a lot in those years, haven't we? 2002, on that date, the 23rd of February, it was announced that Guinness was testing a new system that would slash the waiting time for a pint of the black stuff to 30 seconds. In an effort to combat declining sales in recent years, Guinness was hoping to appeal to people not prepared to wait the 1 minute 59 seconds for the traditional pint to be poured. Who wouldn't want to wait 1 minute and 59 seconds? Oh, it is well worth it. Sunday is the 24th of February, and on that day, back in 1692, the Treaty of Limerick was ratified by William of Orange. So there we go. Some of the stories that were making the headlines across the world relating to Ireland in this coming week. Now, we did mention Enya in there, and that's the only mention, really, apart from Ronnie, of anything to do with music. So I thought, even though we did mention Mikey Ryan, who's Enya's manager, that we should take a track from her. I haven't played this track in a very long time on the radio, and it's a beautiful song. Here is Enya and a song called Marble Halls.
which charmed me most, and that you loved me still the same, and that you loved me, you loved me still the same, that you loved me, you loved me still.
I think the original title of that was I Dreamt I Dwelt in Marble Halls, the beautiful voice of Enya and her version of that. Absolutely stunning. I did say to you at the start of the programme that I would bring you the number one song from this day back in 1965 in Ireland. And we have mentioned number ones on the programme before. We're going to take a run through the charts down through the years at various times and on various weeks on the programme just to play the Irish artists, because as you know, it's all Irish music or Irish artists that we play on Live on Era on Monday evenings here on Talk Radio Europe. So on the 18th of February 1965, the number one song in Ireland was being sung by Brendan Boyer and the Royal Show Band. It is, of course, the Hucklebuck. It went straight to number one at that week. And, you know, I didn't realise that the band had been playing the Hucklebuck for about 2 years in live sessions, dance halls and dances and things like that. And they went into the studio in late 1964 to record I Ran All the Way Home, which was to be the A-side. They had spent so long working on it that they had kind of forgotten that there had to be a B-side, because in those days you had the vinyl. And I know that Bill Paddley was talking about A-sides and B-sides and songs that had been B-sides that had become hits as opposed to the A-side. He did that a few months ago. He was chatting about that. I heard him. But this was slightly different because they had so little time left in the recording studio, they had to put something down very quickly. And because they had been doing the Hucklebuck at dances, they said, you know what, we know that inside out, we can put that down in one. So they put it down literally in one take. And when the producer heard it, he said, hold on a second, lads, that's actually better than the A-side, I Ran All the Way Home, so why don't you flip it? So they did, and it became an absolute hit for them. And 50 years after that, in an interview, Brendan Boyer, who was talking about the 50th anniversary of the Hucklebuck, and he said that that had really become his kind of signature song. And he has spent a lot of time in Vegas, as you probably know. He moved there in the 1970s. And he said that when he's in Vegas, everybody wants to hear Danny Boy because of the Irish connection. But when he's in Ireland, they still want to hear the Hucklebuck. And I have introduced Brendan on stage on numerous occasions. And when he does sing the Hucklebuck, the place goes absolutely bananas. So let's take it. The number one song from this day, 18th of February, 1965 in Ireland, Brendan Boyer, the Royal Show Band and the Hucklebuck.
Do the Hucklebuck, hey! If you don't know how to do it, then you're out of luck.
There we go. That is the fabulous Brendan Boyer and the Royal Show Band, the Hucklebuck. Number one in Ireland on this day, the 18th of February, back in 1965. We're going to take a very quick break, come back to me just after that, and we're going to be talking to Peter O'Dwyer about Brexit and Ireland.
Live on Air, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with EmeraldConnection.net. Live on Air, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with EmeraldConnection.net.
Welcome back to the programme. Now, just before we talk to Peter O'Dwyer, can I give you a reminder on something? I am gathering information on what's happening in various locations in relation to St. Patrick's weekend. 17th of March, by the way, is the date for that. And because it's falling on a Sunday this year, a lot of places are making a weekend celebration out of it, which is absolutely great. If you happen to be listening to this anywhere in the world, well, you are listening to it and you are somewhere in the world, but if it's somewhere that might be off the beaten track and there's something happening for St. Patrick's Day or St. Patrick's weekend, I would absolutely love to hear from you. You can email me at any stage, ger, G-E-R, at tre.radio, and we'll try and put as much together as we can. And unfortunately, the programme will be going out after St. Patrick's Day because it'll be on the Monday, but in the lead up to it, the Monday before, we'll probably do something in relation to that. Alrighty, so that email address again is ger, G-E-R, at tre.radio. The clock is ticking. I think I should have a kind of a tick-tock sound when we do this feature from now on. Clock is ticking in relation to Brexit and the Irish story. We report on that on a weekly basis with Peter O'Dwyer, who is the senior business reporter with The Times Ireland. Peter, good evening and thank you for joining us again today.
No problem. Thanks, sir.
Now, in relation to Ireland, it's pretty much the same old thing being rehashed over and over again. However, there is always something a little bit new in there. And this morning, there was a report released which suggested that violence would be, as in layman's terms, a sure thing if there was a hard border between Northern Ireland and the Republic. How did that go?
You can kind of get maybe a little fatigued with the kind of merry-go-round of negotiations and votes in Parliament and comments from politicians here and in Brussels. And you might kind of lose sight of why Brexit is such a huge event and the specific risks that it poses to Ireland and the island of Ireland. A welcome kind of reminder, I suppose, of those came this morning when there's a new report published. It was conducted by Mark Daly, who's a Fianna Fáil senator, along with three different UNESCO academics. And the report found that violence would be inevitable if there is infrastructure and customs and security checks installed on the Irish border after Brexit. So that's a pretty strong and dire warning, just less than 40 days out from Brexit, when we have no deal on the table at the moment. It was warning that this current, I suppose, younger generation don't have any direct memory of the Troubles, and that it warns that perhaps they might have a romanticised view, and, you know, as you hear stories when violence isn't actually on your doorstep as you're growing up, that maybe those stories wouldn't be an accurate reflection and that they wouldn't completely grasp, I suppose, the gravity of the situation that did exist a couple of decades ago. It also warns that any rush towards a border poll on possible Irish unity could also be equally dangerous. So it's a word of caution, I suppose, to approach both Brexit and any potential border poll with a lot of caution.
I read a couple of things over the weekend that suggested the same thing as this particular report suggested. But there was one report, it may or may not have been this one, that suggested that it wouldn't necessarily be men or women of violence that would conduct raids and destroy property if a hard border was, that ordinary people would do it. Is that likely?
Yeah, there's been a suggestion that, as you say, that it mightn't necessarily take a new branch of the IRA or anybody on the unionist loyalist side that was involved in the Troubles a couple of decades ago, that just ordinary people, maybe farmers, tradespeople, whoever, people that live along the border are so adamant that they don't want this to return that they could seek to dismantle or take down any sort of border infrastructure. It might be the sort of situation where to that individual landowner or person that living along the border, it might seem like a small thing to them, you know, just saying, I don't want it on my land or I don't want it near me. But all it takes is perhaps one little event that is a matchstick and kind of sets the whole thing.
Okay.
So I suppose there's a level of sense in that as well, that if when people from all communities are completely seemingly against a hard border returning, it wouldn't be beyond the realms of possibility to have ordinary people trying to take down whatever infrastructure is put there.
And the irony of it is that it could unite people on different sides.
There was a piece that I'm not sure if your listeners would have seen it, but on Clare Byrne last week, I think it was last Monday or Tuesday night, and they had a father of one of the victims of the OMA bombing on, and he was really just pleading, making kind of a last-ditch attempt to ask politicians to ensure that this border wouldn't come back. And it was really difficult to hear his story about his son who had died, and his brother had also been a victim of the Troubles, I think. So it was kind of one of those, again, it was a bit of a gut punch that we're looking to, just why this is so crucial. And there was audience members from all sorts of different companies based in the north or around the border area, from, as you say, all different communities. And every single one of them was just saying this is going to be really, really difficult at best and a disaster at worst for our businesses and for our communities if a hard border comes back.
All right. While Mrs. May is dancing her way around to various places in the UK and indeed further afield as well, our own Simon Coveney is in Brussels, or was in Brussels today.
Yes. So the Taoiseach is in Brussels, as you say. He has been meeting with Michel Barnier. The discussions were focusing around preparing for a potential no-deal scenario, which I suppose is absolutely no surprise given where we are less than 40 days now from Brexit. Also, the Brexit Secretary from the UK, Steve Barclay, was also to meet with Mr. Barnier today. And Theresa May has said that she's going to attempt to speak to every single EU leader this week and attempt to secure changes to the withdrawal agreement, which still seems pretty unlikely given the EU's position on it. But it's kind of a last roll of the dice. She has also written to members of the Conservative Party and asked them to unite and put their differences behind them for the benefit of the party, but of the country more so.
All right. Well, as we all hear the clock ticking, thank you for your input today, and we look forward to chatting with you next Monday on the programme.
Great. Thanks, Ger.
That's Peter O'Dwyer, who is the Senior Business Reporter with The Times Ireland. And that's where we're going to leave it for this evening. Do hope you've enjoyed the programme as much as I have enjoyed putting it together and presenting it to you. Thank you to our guests today. Thank you to George Lee and to Peter O'Dwyer. Thank you for listening. And most importantly, can I ask you to join me again next week on the programme, please, just after the news at 6 o'clock on Monday. Thank you to our Spanish-Irish cultural consultant. That's Jose Antonio Sierra. If you would like to ease into next weekend, I'm going to be here with you again between 4 and 6, filling in for Giles Brown. It's usually GB, not GQ. So on Friday, it's going to be GS, not GB, not GQ. Between 4 and 6, you can find out all about it. All right, look after yourselves. And if you can't make it on Friday, I'll be back with you hopefully on Monday, just after the news at 6 o'clock for another Live on Era. Until then, from me, Ger Sweeney, we're going to leave you with this one. A great song from Villagers, taking us back a few months. A song called Trick of the Light. From me, Ger Sweeney, and indeed our sponsors, emeraldconnection.net. Thank you for listening. Have a good week. Bye-bye now.
My heart is spilling over, crashing on the ground. See what's around me, but soon I'll come around. My faith is in the balance of a million tiny words, so I return to silence. And if I see a sign in the sky tonight, no one's gonna tell me it's a trick of the light. May never come, but I'm willing to wait. What can I say? The door.
Ger Sweeney presents Live on Era in association with EmeraldConnection.net.